After a decade of cultural annihilation, the Marsh Arabs of southern Iraq are hoping a new government will make it up to them. For more than 5,000 years, these people maintained an ancient lifestyle in the vast marshlands. In little more than 10 years, Saddam Hussein managed to all but destroy that way of life. NPR's Ann Garrels reports on the difficulties of rehabilitating the people and ecosystem.
A long, slim canoe glides through the shimmering water. A lone fisherman casts out his net. He disappears between stands of reeds, where for millennia his ancestors lived in woven grass huts on isolated islands. This is now a rare sight. Stand back and you see a dike extending through what was marshes. On one side there's still water, albeit shallow. On the other, no water at all. Just a never-ending expanse of mud. 51-year-old Barish Edehem Ali shakes his head.
My main job was fishing, and now there is no place for fishing. So it's very difficult for us to find fish. And you can see this old people spending all the day. Maybe they will have few fishes only. So it's not enough for all of us.
For centuries, the marshes covering thousands of square miles in southern Iraq were impenetrable and beyond the law. During the 1980s, they provided a hideout for deserters from the Iran-Iraq War. After the failed Shia uprising in 1991, rebels disappeared into the complex of waterways with the help of fellow Shia marsh Arabs. Then, with brutal efficiency, Saddam laid siege to the marshlands. He built a series of canals, earthworks, and dams. He drained the water and reduced the Middle East's largest wetlands by 90%. Nearly a 500,000 marsh Arabs lived here in 1950. Perhaps only 40,000 remain, no one sure of the numbers. The rest dispersed to cities and refugee camps.
Her brother had been killed by the past regime. And they have told him that you are one of the anti-government people and you have done some terrorist things. And the Ba'ath Party members, they won't let us to live in peace. They always come here and try to move us from this area. Sometimes they burn our houses and we run away. But after that, we give them some money and they go. When the money is over, they return back, they want more. So we were all these years in troubles.
Swathed in black, her piercing eyes framed by a veil, 32-year-old Najat Radvan radiates dignity. Her village was razed. She tried to live in the nearby city of Amara, but has now returned to the area where she was born. Home is a lone thatched reed hut on the parched wasteland. Najat and her husband are illiterate. They eke out a living tending water buffalo, sheep, and cows. Her husband's call shatters the eerie stillness. The herd trundles past scrubby bushes, the only landmarks.
We have skills to work. All we can understand to take care of our animals, which we had income from that. So if we don't work in this area and by this way, we couldn't live. So that's why we prefer to stay here.
She wants the new government to restore the water to the marshes. But her children are probably lost to the marshes forever. They now live with relatives in the city where they go to secondary school. Najat wants them to get the education she was denied. While she prefers her kids don't return, she will stay here. In some places, locals have taken matters into their own hands, breaching Saddam's dikes to reflood the marshes. The water's only risen a little, and it's haphazard. Certainly not according to a UN program, which advised careful study before anyone tries to rehabilitate the complex ecosystem. There will probably never be enough water to resupply the marshes. Since the late 80s, dams in Turkey, Syria, as well as in Iraq itself, have dramatically reduced the flow of the Tigris and Euphrates, complicating the process. There's no going back to the way it once was. And even among marsh Arabs, there's uncertainty about what they want. An elderly woman unloads bunches of reeds from her canoe to feed her animals, the tribal tattoos visible on her ankles and face. She doesn't know how old she is. She wants the marshes as they once were, but others up the road who were forcibly moved to the compound of Al-Fetla now want basic amenities like hospitals, clean water, roads, and schools. From Al-Fetla, it's 7 miles to the nearest school now. Of a crowd of children, only one is enrolled. A barefoot 10-year-old shows off his book bag, stamped with a UN logo. 33-year-old Samer Ajil Musa can't imagine going back to the old way of life. But his efforts to farm in the drained marshland produce little. The earth is too salty. He says Saddam didn't force people into compounds to make their lives better. His only concern was to secure the area. Musa says he never received any help in the past, and he hasn't seen any under the U.S.-led coalition.
Until now, we haven't seen any help or aid from any side, British side or American side. And we are living in a very bad situation. As you can see, all the houses are mud, and even inside the houses, you can't find any furniture.
There's no easy solution. Though the West constantly cited the destruction of the marshes as one of Saddam's worst crimes, the people here are now way down the list of priorities for the U.S. administration and new Iraqi leaders. If nothing is done, there'll be one more group of disappointed Iraqis. Ann Garrels, NPR News.
Photographs of Iraq's marsh Arabs are at npr.org.